The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbess of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. This is from The Hidden Lamp. Stories from Awakened Women Through the Centuries. The Old Woman's Miraculous Powers. Magu, Nanquan, and another monk were on a pilgrimage. Along the way, they met a woman who had a tea shop. The woman prepared a pot of tea and brought three cups. She said to them, "O monks, let those of you with miraculous powers drink tea." The three looked at each other, and the woman said, "Watch this old decrepit woman show her own miraculous powers." Then she picked up the cups, poured the tea, and went out. That's it. So there's a lot that this can give if we can enter it and stay with it. It seems very simple. We pass it by, nothing happened. But why is it brought up for us to look at, to wonder about? So this weekend, we're completing a retreat on art practice called Wonder into Wonder. Creative process, which wonder is the solution to a lot of our problems. If we can bring it into wonder, we can go back into the unknown, into the not known, the not part of our not known, not anything, and yet something has come in. This was a great retreat. I called it a big play day. Play day. Just how I play, and then I had like 30 other playmates for a full day. And I hadn't done this for a while, like so full out like this, a whole full day of just romping and playing in samadhi of creation, which I have to say, everyone in there, it was like a match lit. It was just sparkling. The way everyone was just that, this one flame burning. It was beautiful. Thank you, all the participants, for losing yourself. And some of you came with great fear, because when we hear about art practice, that great freeze comes over us, right? It stops. So it starts with the breath. We started with the breath. We end with the breath. And then something happens in between as we're breathing into expression of our life. So this is a very powerful gate art practice because it brings up so many great reactions. I mean, you might have had one just hearing it. Art practice? Did something come up? And as a practitioner of the Buddha way, we're entering into the path of impermanence. That is the practice of the Buddha way. So, where do we draw the line? Where do we put up walls in our own mind? not claim our miraculousness that's constantly going on, moment to moment. It's interesting because I see people come in, sign their credit card slips with no problem, and then I give them a pencil, and it's like, they can't move. Meanwhile, the signature just blasted out this line with, and then I just give them a pencil, and they're like, and I know that feeling. So where do we draw the line? Where do we put up a wall? What's art practice? What is this woman showing us? How do we put on our own straitjacket? A lot of people come and start art practice with, you know, I'm not really a... And I'm like, Mary had a little... Can't tell, you can't convince me, I'm sorry. It's just not true. It's just not true. What ideas do we have about this miracle of aliveness? Dogen, in his fascicle on miracles, miraculous expression, in 1241 writes, a part we might be able to understand, the miracles I am speaking of are the daily activities of Buddhas. Miracles are practiced 3,000 times in the morning and 800 times in the evening. Miracles arise simultaneously with Buddhas, but are not known by Buddhas, disappear with Buddhas, do not overwhelm Buddhas. Not practicing miracles is not studying the Buddha way. As I said, we chanted in our morning service, we should clearly see that all our activities are wondrous, wondrous in their activity, are nothing but the path of awakening. So this koan brings up nicely, I think, and allows me to draw some parallels with the spirit of art practice. And just ordinary life. So koan is translated as public case, a situation brought us up for us to feel, wonder about, respond to the nature of reality. Ruth Fuller Sasaki said, "I've never found a koan to be paradoxical, except to those who view it from the outside. When it is resolved, it is realized to be a simple, clear view of the consciousness that helps us to awaken." And Daido Roshi wrote, "It's a full-bodied, wholehearted meeting of one's intimate and direct experience of the universe and its infinite facets in the present moment. A family reunion of sorts with the universe of what can't be explained or talked about concerning the great matter of life and death." I remember Kaz in one of his painting retreats, the first thing he started off was, paint your miracle. Paint your miracle. What do you paint? Maybe you just hold the brush and it drips. Done. When I began studying Zen many years ago, there were only a few women ancestors mentioned. Iron Grindstone Lu, I knew of. Ling Jiao Pang, Layman Pang's daughter. I knew about the Buddha's mother, but I didn't know her name. But what I heard mostly in koan's study was a nameless woman, an old crone at the side of the road, killing monastics and Dharma encounter. Leaving them shredded, doing very simple things. Tea cakes, rice balls, cups of tea, pointing, go that way. Ah, there goes another one. I remember in the Zen training weekend, I asked Daito Roshi, where are there any women ancestors? How come they're always old and decrepit and on the side of the road? I cannot remember what he answered me. So this book on the hidden lamp is a breath of fresh air. And also Susan Murcott's book, 1991, The First Women Ancestors, who brings us the poems from the Theragatha. So here's this old woman by the side of the road, who has some tea in her tea shop. Think of Yushin. So we have to imagine and put ourselves in this scene. You're three monastics, you're one of them traveling all day, hot, tired, thirsty, worn, and they meet this old woman and wait for this serving of tea. And they're used to receiving offerings. But instead, she serves them a surprise challenge, doesn't she? Before pouring, she says, "Let those of you with miraculous powers drink the tea." Who has miraculous powers? Let those of you with miraculous powers do art practice. Let those of you with miraculous powers have dinner tonight. But they freeze. Maybe you could see them looking at one. Dead silence. I could see them getting a bit squirmy like that, right? Darting their eyes around, eyeballing. Who's gonna come forth and claim that they have miraculous powers? What do we do now? I'm thirsty. Because in the tradition, a monastic isn't supposed to claim to have any special powers, right? It's following the Buddha's enlightenment, it said he possessed and discussed that several supernatural powers attained through meditation, abilities like walking on water, walking through walls, becoming invisible, levitating, and making copies of himself. Who does not have miraculous powers? What is she asking about? What is on their minds? Why the freeze? What do we have on our mind about what's miraculous and powerful? How do we take up the Dharma, art practice, any of our daily activities of life that are practiced 3,000 times in the morning and 800 times in the evening, seriously, without going about it in a serious way, or thinking we need to be doing something other, or that we're not enough, or there's something special? How do we enter into this circle of wonder? Joko Beck speaks about ordinary wonder. She has a book. Awareness is our true self. It's what we are. So we don't have to develop awareness. We simply need to notice how we block awareness with our thoughts, our fantasies, our opinions, and our judgments. We're either in awareness, which is our natural state, or we're doing something else. We are just living this moment. Stay connected to the present. We don't have to live 150,000 moments at once. We are only living one. That's why I say you might as well practice with each moment, quite plain and ordinary. Wouldn't that be miraculously powerful? Part of the art practice, I said the key is just staying connected to the present. That's it. Let it take you. Don't go anywhere else. You know, we're making something, all of a sudden that tyrant, that judge comes. What are you doing? Mara, we call it sometimes. What are you doing? What does that line mean? That doesn't look like a freeze. And so when you enter into the circle of wonder, then it lifts. The weight lifts. I wonder what's this doing? What's this? What's this mark? What's this color? In investigating wonder, Hongzhi uses wonder a lot. If you look at his practice instructions, he's got the bright boundless field, investigating wonder, the wonder verified and fulfilled. But in the bright boundless field, he says, the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. So don't let that scare you, that there's nothing inherent affixed in something. The not known. The Heart Sutra. No, not. That exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies we have fabricated into apparent habits. Then we can reside in that clear circle of brightness. Utter emptiness has no image. Upright independence does not rely on anything. Just expand and illuminate the original truth unconcerned by external conditions. The deep source, transparent down to the bottom, can radiantly shine and respond unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. So we can see things come up, difficult things, and see it for what it is. Remember, it's what exists from the very beginning. Enacting and fulfilling the way of non-mind. Finally, you can rest. Proceeding, you are able to guide yourself and the assembly. The thoughts clear, sitting silently, wander into the circle of wonder. This is how you must penetrate and study. Wonder. This is how you must penetrate and study. Wonder. How many songs we have? I mean, I hear Yukon in my head all the time. He's wonder, you know, so breaking into something. Wonder of wonders, miracle, you know. And then I hear him, I wonder who. And when fear comes, we can ask fear, is this something I do need to fear? There are things we need to fear. Or is this not something that's helpful? Is this a fear that's not really needed to be feared? In the Avatamsaka Sutra, which we put at the beginning of the art practice, mind is like an artist. able to paint the worlds. The five clusters, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, are all born there, thence. There's nothing it doesn't make. As is the mind, so is the Buddha. As is the Buddha, so are living beings. Know that Buddha and mind are in essence inexhaustible. If people know the actions of mind create all the worlds, they will see the Buddha and understand the Buddha's true nature. It's interesting to make the shift from painting and drawing into language. I'm having a little wall. Wandering into wonder is a hunger to see beautiful things, hear beautiful sounds, feel deeper sensations, feel goodness, fascinated and surprised on a continual basis. Is that possible? Isn't it helpful to view the currents in our culture without following, being obligated to follow the direction of the flow? I love the someone I have a sisterhood and feel maybe I have an incarnation from is Eddie Hilesium. Eddie Hilesium was a 27-year-old woman who tried to capture in her diaries and record and bear witness to the Germans that were coming into Amsterdam to round up the Dutch Jews. And she was taken to the Westerbork transit camp, where she was detained. And they found out about her work because she wrote a postcard on a train as she was being transported that said, "We're singing all the way." And that was found in a farmer's field. And I wanted you to hear her words because of her miraculous way of seeing that is not based on conditions, that it is possible. This is her describing a scene at Westerbork transit camp. "I am with the hungry, with the ill-treated and the dying every day, but I am also with the jasmine and that piece of sky beyond my window. There is room for everything in a single life. The sky is full of birds. The purple lupins stand up so regally and peacefully. Two little old women have sat down on a box for a chat. The sun is shining on my face, and right before my eyes, mass murder. The whole thing is simply beyond comprehension." We can feel her, feel this in us. "I delight in warmth and security, but I shall not rebel if I have to suffer to cold, should you decree. I shall follow wherever your hand leads me and shall try not to be afraid. I shall try to spread some of my warmth, of my genuine love for others, wherever I go. The rottenness of others is in us too. I really see no other solution than to turn inward and to root out all the rottenness there. I no longer believe that we can change anything in the world until we have changed ourselves first." And that seems not first, I added that, till we have changed ourselves, because we can't wait till that happens. And that seems to me the only lesson to be learned from this war, that we must look into ourselves and nowhere else. It still all comes down to the same thing. Life is beautiful. and I believe in God. And I want to be right there in the thick of what people call horror and still be able to say, life is beautiful and miraculous. Eddie shows us nothing can be left out. That our powers are enough, just as they are in every moment, to see things directly and clearly. The three monastics looked at each other and said, and the woman said, watch this decrepit old woman show her miraculous powers. And then she picked up three cups, poured tea, and went out. So as I mentioned, our lives are made up of doing very ordinary things, aren't they? Sleeping, using a computer, a credit card machine, a credit card, driving, thousands of ordinary acts we do every day. I don't know, when you use your credit card, do you say, that was miraculous? When you make a piece of toast, unbelievable. Miraculous that I can make a piece of toast. Truly. More likely, we just move along while we're thinking about something else, our mind leaning into the day, into the future, into the next important thing on the to-do list, hoping it might be something better, more special ahead. And maybe it won't be so, this thing won't be so ordinary. Maybe Zazen won't be so ordinary. You know that feeling? Maybe we see how we make some things important, some things unimportant. And of course, it would follow that we call the unimportant things, or what we find unimportant, we won't pay much attention to. So we space out, hurry through, barely noticing. You know that feeling? Once this done is done, I can get back to the important stuff, the real stuff. In Zazen, we might see this play out, getting lost in a remarkable mind state that we had yesterday morning. Or different states that appear or seem to feel special, a little special. And Zazen slows us down to see that reaching, that restlessness. I remember bringing something to Daito Roshi. I said, everything kind of went blank and black and fuzzy. And he looked at me and he said, I think you're sleepy. And I really felt slightly embarrassed, humbled. And when I really looked at it, I really wanted to bring in like a special state. I wanted this samadhi thing everyone's talking about. So it went black. It went blank. Go get a cup of coffee. And at any given moment, there's usually two things happen. We're present or we're not. We're resisting the present, like wanting to be somewhere else. Distraction, you know, that's what pulls us away from the moment. And when I gave a talk on this, but looking at the roots of the word distraction, it suggests being pulled away, going off track. And things come up, but we can stay focused and where our attention is, not be distracted, pulled away. And we know about presentness. Yet why does intimacy with that fullness, this present, ungraspable, ever-changing moment, feel like threatening or not the place we want to be? Why is there such friction, I find, towards present moment living? I don't know. What amazed us when we were a child? What did we love to see and stare at and watch and be absorbed by? When I was thinking of that, I thought of, well, lots of things, but one in particular was a tongue, a cow's tongue, which my mom used to prepare. That was the most fascinating thing, to unwrap a tongue like that big from a cow. I must have drew that thing 100 times. My mother said, can I cook it now? I was like, one more time. I was just like, oh my God, to look at that so close. I love drawing in the dark. You know, when you're a kid and you're sent to your room and take out the flashlight and read. Well, I took out the pencil to draw, but there was very little light because the lights were off. But there was the moon or light coming in or something under the door. So you always got a little bit of some object that you could see. And that's what I would start with, the dark, and then take the eraser and carve out like a little piece of whatever was shown. And my mom, when she saw it, I would say, look what the moon did. Look what the moon did. I remember one time in the garden, a big groundhog got in and went into a hole. And we all stood there around this hole, and you could see inside his whiskers and these little beady eyes. And I remember looking at everyone, looking in the hole, and it was like the wonder and the amazement was just cut through everything in that moment. The old woman recaptured this sense of the magic, and she poured 3 cups of tea. John Wellwood, a therapist who writes about spiritual practice and emotional groundedness, writes, "Hard as this may be to grasp, the Buddha, our awakened mind in each person, it is whatever we're experiencing in that moment, the wind in the trees, the traffic on the freeway, the confusion we are feeling. But if we surrender to it, surrendering means to experience it fully. Give it our full attention without struggling against it or making it something other than what it is. A moment of nowness, sharp and thin as a razor's edge, and walking on this razor's edge cuts through the struggle of self and other that separates us from a more immediate presence to life." This separation and this razor's edge of what we're uncovering in ourself in Zazen, of the emptiness of all the conditions, and then this karmic body in this relative life, like Velcro on earth, that has to work through this body and its tangles and its karma, and at the same time knowing what is at the base. That's so important to keep recognizing. And if you, even if it's intellectual, to just remember that it's there. And so then we're what does he say? sharp and thin as a razor's edge, those two, that meeting right there of those two truths. That's what art practice is. And somehow it lands into a poem, onto the page as a mark, into a dance, into a movement, into a photograph. Just a moment. It bursts through and we leave it. Miraculous. Moment to moment. This woman shows us the highest art. The highest art. The art of living. Fully. The old woman knew that her powers were enough, just as Eddie did. She was able to stay in connection with her aliveness and her wonder, the miraculous, not ignoring reality at all. She was facing it, mass murder, right there. Saw it all, and seeing a larger reality that no one could give her, no one can give us, and that no one can take away. This old woman, gaining strength and resilience to be of benefit to others. And when we gain that, it in turn automatically goes out to others. In this world, within its miraculous display of enlightened nature, this woman, she picked up 3 cups, poured the tea, and went out. She's giving herself to herself, thereby giving others to others, and left us here, now, to wonder and to wonder. Okay, that's it.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.